You're still not recording. God damn it.
Are you armed?
What the fuck? God shit. You're listening to Around Comics episode 281.
It's a better book.
God damn it, Jimmy.
Damn it, Jimmy.
No, God damn it, Jimmy.
Oh, sorry.
It never says damn it. Just God damn it,
hey,
Jimmy.
Hey, it's your bunk.
You happy now, motherfucker?
I'll do my bunk however the hell I want to do my bunk.
Touch your bunk. Start talking.
Hey there, folks.
Don't stop. Don't let me interrupt you.
God damn it, Bunk.
Just keep going.
Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman
professional.
Here. Welcome to Around Comics for June of 2011. I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mr. Brian Salazar. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great. You're fantastic. Okay. I started vacation today. I'm phenomenal.
I won't
see you for like 9 days.
I know. It's going to be the greatest 9 days of your life.
We'll see.
In the last 6 years. Tonight on the show, we are joined by the fantastic Mr. Ryan Brown.
Is it Brown or Brownie? He's got an E on the end.
Yeah,
of it.
It does Brownie. Have the
I want to call him Ryan Brownie. I'm going to call him Ryan Brownie.
From now on, he's Ryan Brownie.
Is it Ryan or Ryan?
Ryan.
I'm going to call him Ryan
Brownie.
Ryan
Brownie.
That's his name from now on.
Ryan Brown, of course, from God Hates Astronauts and the soon to be released to computer screens near you, Blast Furnace webcomic.
Blast Furnace.
And he's also been on the great double feature horror issue.
Double feature horror issue with B. Clay Moore. What the hell was the name of that? Oh, he left.
No, he's not. But we're going to talk with Ryan about a variety of topics,
yes.
Including Mike Costa, his childhood friend, Paolo Rivera,
and his
college roommate. This guy knows everybody.
Yeah.
RV trips around the country. Supreme Power.
RV.
Die Hard. And,
with a vengeance?
A little bit of Jaws, some All-Star Superman.
Very little.
I think it was just a mention.
Yeah.
Sweet
Cameo.
Tooth.
Cameo.
And
The Tooth.
The Six Gun.
A lot of Cullen Bunn. How's Cullen get? Is he paying for all this?
I don't know. We need to send Cullen an invoice. We also talk about your love of trains.
I do love trains.
And
I especially like comic books with trains in them.
Mm-hmm.
Trains, engineers.
There's... Were you a fan of the Thomas the Tank Engine?
No, I don't even know what that is. I don't know.
Oh, come on. You
Thomas
got kids.
Thomas the Tank Engine? Thomas the Tank Ass? What?
Thomas the Tank Engine.
Thomas the Tank Engine?
Yeah.
What the fuck is a tank engine?
It's a train.
With a tank on it?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. Thomas the Train Tank.
No. With George Carlin and then... No, whatever.
No, sorry, man.
Well, we're going to join the conversation
My
in progress talking
Dexter.
About the recently announced DC relaunch and digital initiative.
And the huge mistakes they're making.
No, that's
somebody else. That's
come
a different
on,
podcast.
Put on your positive pants, Debbie Downer.
I am Mr. Fucking Positive. Are you kidding me? You know how many tweets I don't send out because I type them out and I go, oh, that's really negative. No, I won't say that about Vince. And then I delete it and I don't ever send it because I'm trying to be more positive.
That's how you spend most of your day.
It really is. It's really affecting my workflow. I spend so much time deleting tweets.
All right. On to the conversation, Bunk.
God damn it.
Okay. Well, it may not happen.
Yeah, I love talking about the art form. I just, as I said, man, I just don't read much superhero stuff at all anymore.
I think it's kind of a natural progression. Denny O'Neill had a great story where he was talking about when they were doing Batman comics in the 70s, and there was this assumption that the readership turned over every 3 years. Every 3 years. That was the assumption.
Wow.
Is that you had comic book readers from like age 12 to 15, and every 3 years they would kind of do a soft reboot, reintroduce everything, and make sure that they were either catching people on the tail end or the front end to kind of bookend stuff.
Sure.
So this over the last like 30, 40 years, it's kind of morphed into the needing the lifelong fan.
25-year.
Yeah. I think approaching it with we're going to turn over our readership every 3 years is a great way to kind of keep things moving.
I guess that kind of leads us into DC's new relaunch thing, which we haven't really talked about at all. But it was funny, I was reading some of the Flashpoint stuff that came out over the last couple of weeks. Specifically the Wonder Woman one, Wonder Woman and the Furies.
Oh, yeah.
And
I haven't read that yet. It looks cool. The character design's awesome.
Shoot, I can't remember the other one I was reading. There was another one.
Emperor Aquaman?
No, the monster one. The Frankenstein.
Oh, that was good.
Jeff Lemire's one.
Yeah, that was good.
And it was kind of interesting as I was reading it. I was like, they really felt like, not that they were dumbing things down, but they felt like they were sort of dumbing things down. Like, they were making the story simpler, and, like, the dialogue was very simplistic and sort of explained everything. I mean, it very much reminded me of a comic from, the 60s or, 70s, where it was written for, kids.
I don't know if that's a bad thing. I did read the Frankenstein, which, it's Frankenstein and the... It's not Monster Squad, but what are they?
I wish it was.
That's basically what it is. It's the vampire, the Frankenstein, the creature from the Black Lagoon, and a werewolf? Was there a werewolf in there?
Yes.
So it's the Creature Commandos. Yeah, it's okay. Frankenstein and the Creature Commandos.
That's not what it's called either, but that's what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But Jeff's a pretty darn good writer. I don't know if you read Sweet Tooth or read Essex County.
I haven't.
A real interesting case of a guy that was kind of like indie darling and now is really made a heavy transition over to mainstream. But it didn't feel like he was expositional to me. But I do know what you're saying, that it was much more straightforward.
It was only because of how I'm used to comics of the last 10, 15 years, where it's very sort of decompressed and this was like bam bam bam. I mean, things were moving very quickly. There was it was like every dialogue balloon was sort of like going, this is what we're doing, and we're doing it because of this, very much like if I was reading it to my kids would completely understand this, or if my daughter was reading it, she would not get lost in it, she would understand everything about it. And I don't know if it was just Jeff doing that, I don't know, but there was a couple of them. There was that one, there was a couple other ones that very much felt the same way. But then there was a couple that were pretty dark, like The Grodd of War.
I have not read that yet.
It was pretty good.
You put Grodd in a comic book, but it's definitely on the list.
But once again, it sort of was in the same way, but then it had like really dark moments of Grodd, like ripping a dude's head off and stuff like that. So it was sort of, and that's why I always sort of get angry at,
did we really need that beheading?
Yeah, exactly. Like, was that really necessary? And they always do that in the animated films. And it always, like my kids, more so my son, loves all the DC animated movies and stuff, and we watch them all the time. But there always seems to be this moment where, there has to be some cursing, or there has to be something, some sort of innuendo or something. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, why? What is the point of that? Well, who are you trying to please?
Have you seen the Emerald Knights feature yet?
Yes.
How do you like that?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
I don't watch it through a parent's eyes. I really enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of the Tales of the Green Lantern Corps and all that, and that's what it was, basically the animated movie of Tales of the Corps.
Right.
And I didn't feel like there was anything that was too,
No, that one was that there wasn't really anything in there so much, but like if you go back to First Flight, there's like a moment where he's running around with Sinestro in like the red light district of this planet, beating up a hooker basically. And it's just like, who are you? Who are you writing this for? Who is this? Supposed to
people
be
who
for?
Don't like hookers.
For me, they're writing it for me. For you, that's for, funny.
That was you.
Ryan, you have in every one of your books a scene where someone beats up a hooker.
I'm trying really hard. I couldn't fit one in issue two, but eventually that's the goal.
With the sound effect, hook this.
I want to offend the hooker comic book reading community.
It's a growing
segment.
As best
as I can.
It's a growing segment. That's all. That's the digital market.
Just get them out of the way.
But back to DC. I don't think that we need to recap what's going on. It's been on every message board, and I've talked about it.
It's been already oversaturated. People
know my thoughts on it if they've listened to 11 o'clock. I'm very excited. I think there's a lot of opportunity both for kind of relaunching and for the digital stuff. But if you want to hear my thoughts, go listen to the 11 o'clock episode. I think people are anxious to know what Sal thinks.
Me?
Yes.
No, I think it's awesome. I'm hoping it's awesome. I'm hoping it's very successful. I think it's a very bold move by DC. I think obviously it's already pissed off a lot of people that are sort of diehard comic book fans, and I appreciate that and I understand it. And quite honestly, looking at the list of 52 books that they're putting out in September, there's probably not a whole lot of those books that I'm going to be that interested in as a 40-year-old comic book
reader. But the ones that you're interested in, unfortunately, are the ones that in today's market probably won't do really well.
Here's the thing. I'm hoping that today's market is changing because of this. I'm hoping that's their goal, is to change what today's market of comic book readers are. And I said it to you earlier tonight. I'm not hoping that in September that there's 52 comics that come out and they're the best comics that I ever read. I'm hoping that they're the best comics that a bunch of people who have never read comics read, because they're available digitally, because they're number ones, I hope that I don't like them and millions of other people do. Because honestly, I think trying to make me happy is going to do exactly what it is doing, and
they've been trying to make us happy, and it's not working.
I'll just tell you right now, I've been reading comics since I was 10 years old. 30 years I've been reading comic books. At this point in my life, I'm not spending more money on comics. It's just not going to happen. I've already spent as much money as I'm going to spend, yearly on comics. I'm trying to find ways to spend less money.
You got college tuition, and not your own. To start,
you know what I mean?
I'm
not going to do it. And just for me personally, my life is too busy. I'm just not obsessed with comic books anymore. It's not something I have to do every week. It's not something that, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure I'm not the only guy my age that at one time,
Well, that's why we see about a 10% reduction in the market every year for 5 years now? I mean, there was a point where the top-selling book was 180,000, and now Flashpoint comes out, it didn't even do 90,000. Yeah.
At the same time, you have 16 million iPads sold already, and hopefully they can capture 1% of those people and get them to buy comics and get a new... And I hope that's what DC is trying to do. I'm sort of assuming that's their plan.
I kind of saw a quick stat that was thrown out there that if 3% of existing iPad users, that's not talking about the hundreds of thousands that will pick up, almost every month, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying buying an
some
iPad.
like I forget how many, 100 million tablet users within the next 5 years or something ridiculous. But the existing iPad users, if 3% of existing iPad users become digital comics readers, the comic market will quintuple.
Yeah, absolutely. You said, there's 16 million, people that own iPads already. Well, it's probably more than that now. You don't need everybody. You need a small percentage will destroy how many people are reading comics now. It'll just completely change the market if you can do it. If you can, I don't know. I still think that there's some things that need to change in order for them to do it. I don't think that this is a perfect solution. I don't think DC's, just going to nail it and it's going to be this crazy successful thing. But, I think it's an opportunity. I think I have a future comic book reader living with me every day, and I see him every day. He's 5 years old, and he loves superheroes. And really, it's more the movies and the cartoons than anything else. And there's certainly an opportunity. He's not reading yet, but he will be soon. And there's certainly an opportunity for him to be turned on to comics. I mean, like I said, we went and saw Kung Fu Panda last night, me and the kids and my wife, and my son was wearing a Green Lantern mask and a Green Lantern ring through the entire movie. I was more interested in going out in the lobby and looking at the big, gigantic Green Lantern
cardboard
thing that they had out there. And, like, going, you know, he knows more about the Green Lantern than I do from watching these.
Power rings are cool, man.
Absolutely. He's running around the theater with this little power ring that glows, you know, glows green and a Green Lantern mask on. And he doesn't care about Kyle or Hal or, you know. It doesn't matter.
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern's cool. And he flies around and he makes things with a ring and he's in space. And that's all he cares about. So I know that there's a lot of comic book fans out there that are already reading into all the stuff that DC has announced about their relaunch and are very unhappy with it. And, you know, to me, I think that's a good sign. Yeah. You know, as sort of cruel as that is to say about the current comic book fan base, we're just not getting it done.
If something radical
doesn't change. And I know this is sort of like, you know, comics are not going to die. They're not going to be gone. They're not, they will always be around. But, you know, jazz music is still around.
Yes.
But it's not really vibrant. It's not, you're not seeing brilliant, you know, new jazz coming out all the time, you know, from the hottest artists.
It's trying to be either what it was in the 50s and 60s or it's really bad.
So,
or who knows what it is. It just doesn't get the publicity that it should.
Right. But I think, you know, I think that DC's, I think they're making a smart decision with it. I think it's really a brave thing. Maybe brave's
a well for an industry that traditionally an industry that anytime that they've made a major move, it's because they've had to go kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
Every time that the comics market does something radical.
Well, but that's no different than any other
corporation. So I think they're actually a little ahead of the curve. I mean, they saw the writing on the wall, but I thought it was a bold move. I think that you and I are the same mind, where a lot of comic book fans are thinking that it's too hard of a move. You know, it's not enough.
Yeah. I
want to see more genre fiction. One of the things I'm disappointed at is that there's not a police procedural in the new slate. Here's a chance. I mean, you know, I've always been a big fan of like Gotham Central. But
one of the most underrated books.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
So come out with, you know, the Gotham, you know, the Gotham PD book.
Isn't something like that more geared towards guys like you and me than it is a 15-year-old?
Well, you know,
15-year-old kids don't give a shit about
that's fine, you know, procedures. But there are of those 16 million iPad owners out there, you know, there's a lot of them that aren't 15-year-olds.
True.
How many friends do you know that a book like Gotham Central would appeal to? If more so than, you know, Magic of Shazam.
Yeah, it's like that's the big point. You're not trying to get superhero fans to buy your genre books. You're trying to get people that don't read comics, who are scared of superheroes, into reading comics.
Right.
And that those are the books that appeal to them. I mean, I think that that is the big thing that is missing from all of this. And, you know, you're saying 3% of people who own iPads start reading DC superheroes. There's still DC superheroes, so I think 3% is a stretch.
Oh, absolutely. Like, they're not going to get 3%.
They're not going
to
get that.
If they can get 1% to just try it out, I think that they're way in great shape.
Yeah.
In great shape.
Like, I'm working.
Why do we have the feeling that people are afraid of superheroes? I mean,
No, I agree.
Iron Man, the movie, does phenomenal box office. Well, you know, all the superhero, except, you know, the really horrible ones. But, I mean, the ones that are decently made, people, and have big name stars in them, people flock to. And I know those people aren't reading comics.
Yeah.
So why? But I don't think people are afraid of superheroes or are not interested in.
I don't think the general public is like maybe 5 or 6 of the 52 relaunch titles to be more genre, and they have a Western, you know.
Yeah.
Western
vampire romance.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what it is not just superheroes. It's superheroes combined with comics. Movies are such a familiar thing for everybody. Like, if you're going to make someone make a jump to reading comic books, then like the subject matter has to be something they're more comfortable with, perhaps.
Right.
So like. you know, anybody will, everybody sees movies, so a superhero movie is not a big stretch. But a superhero comic, that means they have to be in a genre they are kind of, you know, unfamiliar with, right? And they're reading comics, which they don't do. Yeah.
Speaking of, did you hear what or did you see what IDW announced today or yesterday?
The Star Trek?
No, Game of Thrones
comic.
Yeah. Really?
Interesting.
So.
Well, hey, why not?
Throw it out there. Yeah, throw it out there digitally, man.
Do it. The I'm reading the book right now. The show is phenomenal.
Are you caught up? Are you caught up?
On the show, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've tried so hard not to spoil that for
you. Yeah, well, I'm glad. Well, you didn't, but Tori at work did sort of spoil it for me.
You watch Game of Thrones?
I don't. I don't. It's crazy good. I can't watch anything with nudity. I get too offended.
Let's talk about Ryan Brown, creator extraordinaire. Let's delve into the dark mind of Ryan Brown.
He handed me a little mini comic today. Tell me about
a mini comic of awesome.
Yeah, tell me about Blast Furnace. What is Blast Furnace? Tell people what that is.
So, so I'll give you the long version. So I've been doing God Hates Astronauts for a while as a webcomic with the idea of getting it into print. And
what's there are two print issues.
Well, yes, that I have published myself, but I can't get a single publisher to touch them. I can get lots of publishers to tell me that they love it, keep making it, tell me when I can read more, but no one wants to publish it because it's kind of a genre-bending thing, and apparently kind the genres that it bends together don't like each other.
They don't think they can sell it, but...
Yeah, they don't think they can sell it.
Everybody loves it. I haven't seen anyone read it that hasn't loved it. I mean, I haven't heard anyone speak, you know, anything but glowingly about it, and...
Well, you should convince them to publish comic books.
Well, I'm trying to...
It's a growth industry. Yeah,
right,
I'm
going
to be trying to convince people to publish my own, so I don't have time for yours. But I could see it. I've read both issues of it, and I read Blast Furnace, and it's I describe you as having a very interesting mind. That's how I've described you to people so far.
I will accept that. Keep going. So I also am starting to actually have a career. Basically based from working with God Hates Astronauts, people are starting to hire me from things that I'm getting paid for.
You were in the double feature horror?
Yes, I was.
With
B. Clay Moore, which was awesome. Working with Clay was super cool. Yeah. And I'm excited to do another one. So I'm starting to get work, more work than I can even handle, and that means God Hates Astronauts is difficult to fit in. Especially because, you know, I have to do everything on it. So I have issue 3 written and I've done a bunch of pages, but I can't really update it regularly and do what I'm doing to make a living right now.
Bring home the bacon,
so it's kind of on a little bit of a hiatus, which should upset like 3 or 4 fans.
Consider me upset. So
what I've decided to do in order to have my fun still and still write and still create exactly what I want to read. I mean, God Hates Astronauts is everything I ever wanted to read, and that's the whole idea. It's just
bare knuckle boxing bears.
Yeah, I draw things that are funny to me. Yeah, and I just go with it, and I try and make sense. And
we're talking to the man that used the word cocaine as a sound effect in a comic.
Well, we were talking earlier, and I just said, I don't know if you invented that idea, you know, if you came up with that. I've never really seen it before, but the way that you use sound effects is just hilarious to me.
Oh,
and
awesome.
I get as much fun out of reading your books just from the sound effects as anything else. It's just you have a knack for that, and it's such a cool part of the books that you make.
Thanks. I have a lot to say about sound effects, actually. Let me finish Blast Furnace first. So basically, the idea was, like, the people that are getting disappointed at God Hates Astronauts not updating regularly because I had too much other stuff to be doing, I decided that I was going to... People have been telling me over and over again that my 24-hour comics are just as good as my print finished comics.
How do you take that? You know, whatever.
My mind is very limited when it comes to writing, and really the first thing I think of is usually the best. So I'll just go with it. So I decided that I would just work in that 24-hour comic format, where 24-hour comic is where you sit down with no pre-planning and you make a 24-page comic in 24 hours. So you're just, you write and draw a page in an hour, write and draw a page in an hour for 24 hours. At the end, you have 24 pages and a whole story. So, you know, that's really how my mind works best. So I decided I was going to do a 24-hour comic, but do a year-long comic, a page a day as a web comic, an hour per page, writing and drawing as I go. Skipping weekends because I need some time to build up some pages. So it's going to be a 252-page story, which I will do in a year. That's the idea.
That's awesome.
I'm waiting till I fail. So I was thinking about having like a bracket where people can vote on a month that I don't update a page on a Monday, and then they win the pot or whatever. And if I make it all the way through, I get all the money.
That's not a bad idea. It'll keep you motivated,
right,
too,
exactly.
You get people to put a buck in or $5 or whatever. And yeah. Then,
right. You know, I gotta get claim the prize.
Yeah.
So it's like a physical endurance thing for an entire year. I don't know if I can do it or not, but I'm going to try my best. So it's gonna be Monday through Friday, a page every single day of the week, of the weekday, I guess, at blastfurnacecomic.com.
And of course, you can find God Hates Astronauts at godhatesastronauts.com.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is, believe it or not, I really don't like web comics. And I don't.
Why?
You know, I
you don't like the format. You don't,
I don't
like reading
the format.
Them? You
don't the like, format. Yeah. I can't read a page a week.
It's hard. It's just, it's
you
really
can't be immersed in it. You know,
Freak Angels, the Warren Ellis web comic. Mm-hmm. I only read it in trade. I don't read the web comic. I wait
There's
for
a bunch
it
of
trade.
Web comics out there that I always think, oh, I should read that. I should check, and then I'll go. Well, I'll read it, but I'm going to wait a little while until it builds up, and then I'll go back, and then I never go back.
Well, here's my other idea. If you wait to every Friday to read Blast Furnace, you've got 5 pages to read, and that's like a little bit of a chunk of story to read. And
just make your Friday that much better.
Yeah, exactly. So every Friday you could read it, and you could read 5 new pages.
Blast Furnace Fridays.
Exactly.
All right. I think it's a Twitter. Twitter name. I wanted to ask you, from the stuff that I've read of you so far, this character, Blast Furnace, and the main character in God Hates Astronauts, they seem to have a bit of the same thing going with them, is that they're very sort of macho, like over the top, kind of, you know, these crazy heroic. But I don't even know how to describe them. I mean,
it's reckless.
Reckless. Yeah. Very.
I think of it as like creative action movie writers that went out for like a weekend bender and started just jotting down the craziest ideas that they could and making a comic out of it. I mean, it is. There's a macho-ness to it, but it's just like, you know, how many shots of bourbon did it take for him to come up with this particular, you know, story point?
I'm waiting to be found out that I'm just really one or two jokes and a funny sound effect, and that's about all I got.
That's all you got.
That's about all I got. I really... I get so frustrated. Like, I don't read too many current comics right now because I really, really enjoy humor in comics, and so many comics are completely humorless, and I don't understand that at all. Why there aren't more humor comics? Because I feel like when you're reading the beats of panels, it's like the beats of comedy, you know, and you really have the setup and then the punchline, and it's so the comedy is so easy in comics. Like,
Well, you know, we got turned on to God Hates Astronauts from Chris Burnham. He actually had brought it here, I think, right, to Challengers.
Yeah. And turned down.
I don't even know where he...
I met him at Wizard World last year, and then
couldn't stop talking about it. He was raving about it. And
he turned Patrick and Dal onto it. And
when I read it, the first thing that I said about it was it was a perfect example of the only thing you could only do that comic as a comic. Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't do that in any other medium, and it's a perfect example of
maybe animation, but I don't know.
I don't know. I don't even know if you could pull it off because but it would be like a weak sister to the comic because with the sound effects you're just sort of replicating it. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be the same.
You control the pacing so much on the page,
but it is one of those things that you're not going to find that in any other medium, and that's it was a great example of why comics are awesome.
Brian's like, dude, you're totally screwing over my Adult Swim. Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on. I didn't mean to stop
cutting up my paycheck.
And that goes back to my frustration with webcomics is that one of the great things in comics is, I think, the page turn, you know, where you have the setup on the last panel on the right-hand page, and you have the page flip, and then you've got the reveal, and that reveal is so awesome. And if you're doing a page a week, like, there's no buildup. And I do have some page flips, especially in issue 2. And putting it out as a page a week, I was just like, all right, everybody, read the page before again, and then read today's page. And it's just like, it's so irritating. it's so limiting.
Well, why put it out weekly then?
Because it's the only way I ever got exposure. I was doing self-publishing. Issue 1 came out in 2007, and no one cared.
No one cared.
Publishers didn't care. I had no fans. I would give it out at shows. No one cared.
Get ready for the onrush of podcast fame, my friend.
Right. Yeah,
but what I mean is, couldn't you do Blast Furnace monthly and just put it out online monthly
or is it really kind of the challenge of that, the whole 24-hour mentality?
Well, do that.
Just don't release it.
Yeah. I don't know if that.
I've thought about that, but see, like, if you spread it out over a longer period of time,
people forget.
In people's minds more, and people aren't going to remember like the first of the month. Like, I need to go over and read this whole thing.
Right.
That's another big thing about the webcomics. And I've talked, with Mike Norton a lot about this, who's Battle Pug. I love. So we talk about, how webcomics, but every time I read a page of Battle Pug, every time I go, I have to go and read a couple pages leading into the page every single time. So I know every one of those pages really, really well. And it's, they're great pages.
You're going to end up reading that series like 8 times.
I know, but we talk about how, obviously Mike has got a much bigger audience than I do, but how in the world do you get to the casual reader? The person that isn't a comic book fan, who doesn't know who Mike Norton is, like, the big web comics are the ones that get posted on a blog that's not comics related at all, and then a bunch of people in an office building somewhere spread it around, and then it's got millions of hits or whatever, and that's like how you make the real like web comic success, where you have paying ads and you can actually make some money. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you get to the non-comic reading fan?
End up on Colbert Report.
Right.
I talked when Mike was doing Battle Pug, we talked to him about it, and I had asked him about it, that sort of that same thing about, do you think of it, because you guys are both basically doing a regular comic book as far as sequentially, it's the story, page by page, in the webcomic format, but a lot of those more successful webcomics are more gag strips.
Yes, strips.
Yeah. And they're webcomics. I mean, you're self-publishing on the web is what you're
doing.
That's
a big difference.
Yeah. And that's Steve Bryant talked about this. He did Athena Voltaire. Mm-hmm. And that was a traditional comic book that was just put out a page at a time online because they couldn't afford to publish it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, has there been any sort of you know, non-strip web comics that have been super successful like that?
I think Axe Cop is one I look at.
Axe Cop. But
I don't know how super successful it is, but it's successful enough it that people know
buzz.
About it.
It got a
people
huge know buzz. Yeah.
And, you know.
I kind of think that that Blast Furnace is like the white drunk uncle of Axe Cop. You know,
have you thought about getting like a 7-year old and just having them write comics?
I've only had like, well, I do sort of have a gimmick of doing a page a day for a year, but like, man, that guy's got a really good gimmick.
Yeah,
that
kid, that gimmick, having that kid that, sitting there writing
just,
that thing
just to, you know, just to have people send an email like, look at this, it was written by a 6 or 7 year old, and then everyone's gonna look at
get
it.
Get a monkey, dude. Yeah. Just get a monkey, tell people he writes the comic, and then you just...
I hear your son's pretty cool. What is he doing?
Nothing. He's, I don't know,
acting like Green
running
Lantern.
Around the house.
Does he have good ideas? I need some good ideas.
He'll come up with... I don't know what... He'll come up with something, I'm sure. Yeah, he likes...
Well, tell us a little bit about Blast Furnace. I want people to check...
What's the
quick pitch? And you can go to the website and read the whole thing. But first of all, what's the entire title of the comic?
Well, it's called Blast Furnace Recreational Thief. And he... The whole point of the character is that he is a recreational thief. So... And I haven't even gotten into it. I'm 37 pages into plotting it out and drawing it, and I haven't even gotten into his home life. But he has a job and a wife and a regular life, but for fun, he goes out and he steals stuff. And,
he's like a thrill thief.
Yeah, thrill thief. Yeah. He's a recreational thief. He doesn't take, you know, he doesn't take his work home with him, and he doesn't take his hobby to work. And he's, you know, he's got his dual identity, I guess.
Of he has just, a tie that's on fire.
Yeah. Before he prepares for going out, he slips his robber's domino mask underneath his glasses. And he lights his tie on fire and puts on his robbing gloves, and then he goes out and he steals stuff.
Does he wax his sweet mustache?
Yeah, well, there's the mustache is turning more and more into a gag as it goes along. There's some surprises coming, but you know, obviously, I don't really know where it's going. I have ideas for scenes, and I think it can get pretty heavy at times. That's probably not going to happen.
You're not all like, you know, over the top gags. There are some very subtle moments of humor in there. That it's the scene where he's at the motel front desk. It's kind of subtle that he steals the pen from the desk, and that's.
Yeah, in the first three pages, that was my attempt at a character moment. Was he's signing in at a seedy motel, and he has to sign the guest book with his name Blast Furnace, and he realizes that the pen is attached to the desk. And then in the next page, we see him walking away having stolen the pen, having ripped it from the desk. And that was just kind of where that character is. It's just like, it is so much fun, and he so compulsively wants to steal things that he just is going to steal everything, no matter how small and insignificant. And pretty soon, I'm going to get around to the page of what he does with everything that he steals, because clearly he has a day job, and he's not a rich billionaire, but he just has this compulsion to steal.
Now, the sound effects, okay. Which is, I think it's a trademark. I think it's one of the reasons why I love your work and can't wait to read more. It's like, okay, do you keep a list of what will be bizarre sound effects, or is it just kind of whatever the panel demands?
It's basically whatever it demands. I mean, I kind of am making that sound effect in my head while I'm drawing it. Or, you know, like maybe out loud sometimes. Even
Here's a Ryan Brown sound effect. If someone gets hit in the head with a wrench, what's the sound effect?
Wrench.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just
doorbell.
Betrayal. And it's not like we're not doing it justice. Us saying it, it just does. For whatever reason,
it's like explaining a joke.
Yeah, it works so well on the page, and I laugh at the sound effects as much as anything in the book. It just they kill me, and I kind of now am looking for that all the time. If you ever stop doing that, I'm going to be really disappointed. I know you don't want to turn into sort of like the sound effect, the guy that does the wacky sound effects. Yeah. But it is, I mean, it is super entertaining, and it adds so much to the book.
I've started to study lettering. I'm trying to, you know, my hand at lettering.
Don't study mine, please.
No, it doesn't hold up the scrutiny at all.
It is awesome, though. It's, but, you know, you study the lettering in comics, and it's like, how can I make the word, you know, kablam or, you know, kapow or whatever look cool? And everyone does that, and everyone kind of uses the same types of sound effects in comics that they just kind of almost like fade away. You almost don't notice them anymore. And in yours, it's all hand lettered, and there's no fancy illustrator effects or anything.
Right.
But you stop and you giggle at them, and that I get more impact reading your comics and sound effects than I do from the most skilled, you know, letterer out there making the coolest looking.
Todd
you know,
Klein, I'm sorry. You know. I'm sorry.
Well, it's more about the effect that it has.
It's the uniqueness of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what like I said, we were sitting out here, me, Dal, and Sam sitting out here reading the mini comic, and we're all laughing, you know, out loud at different points in the book, you know, just. And I know I was laughing at some of the sound effects, but where did that come from? Why did you start doing that, or why do you, you know, what did that come from?
All right, so here's a story. So I think the sound effects come, for me, the most influential book has been Rob Schraub's Scud, The Disposable Assassin. And he is the person that, like, really started with the sound effects stuff. I'm really stealing a lot of that, or taking what he started and just continuing with it. I also really like the idea that he had of having suggested voice talent and a cast for all the members of the book, which he had in every issue of Scud, and like it just really enhanced the reading experience. I like to do that too. So like both I firmly attribute to him. With the sound effects, it just comes naturally to me because that's just the way I think, I guess, you know, like I make sound effects when I draw, you know, and like that's just part of it. And I think that it's a big part of the language of comics, and it gets totally passed over a lot. And I actually hate comics that don't use sound effects. You know, there's that whole, you know, Mark Millar, you know, Bendis kind of, this is a movie, this is cinematic, right. So we're not going to have
sound effects. Balloons,
but it's just like, wait a second, you have dialogue balloons. I'm still reading text on a page. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's like, is that guy getting punched or did he miss? Like, I don't know. I can't really tell from this drawing. So it's just like, it's part of the language of comics to have sound effects. They help, you know, you don't have sound in a comic book, so you have to read it. So you have to tell people what's happening. It's part of the language. It's part of telling the story. So I try to have mine not just be passive, so they're not just sitting around, you know, just informing you as to what it sounds like, sort of, but just kind of enhancing character. The sequence, yeah, and giving the character they to what's character, happening, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's always been my thought process about it. It makes it so much more fun. why do you want, you know, it to say crack over and over again when people are getting punched, where you can have, you know, a little bit of fun with it and really enhance the story.
How did you get into doing comics? Where did you start out? I mean, did you go to art school? You said before you read comics.
Definitely. I grew up with in a suburb of Detroit with Mike Costa, who's still my best friend, and he writes
Mike
yeah,
Costa?
He writes for IDW.
Oh yeah, I've talked to Mike a lot. Yeah.
Do you really?
I have talked to Mike a lot. I mean, we're not buds.
Because he doesn't like you.
It's true. Now it makes sense. I think Mike does follow me on Twitter, and I had put out a tweet that we were going to be talking with you, and he retweeted it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, Mike must be a fan. Yeah. Of you, not us.
Could be a fan of both.
I talked to him several times about G.I. Joe Cobra, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
and he's going to be doing... Well, speaking of... Okay, one of the... bring it full circle. One of the DC books I'm really excited about is an espionage book, Blackhawks. written by Mike Costa.
There you go.
That's why I really love that relaunch. DC's given him a chance, and it's going to be exactly what he can do very, very well. It's going to be awesome.
Mike's a very nice guy. And a side note, I believe that his roommate is one of the writers for White Collar.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, yeah, the USA
Network
show.
Yep. Hit TV show.
There you go.
Those LA guys.
So you grew up with Mike?
Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, yeah. Hey. He's my best friend, and we have...
Small fucking world.
Yeah, I know, right? We have... four or five, probably. No, it's probably been narrowed down to about 3 or 4 pitches that we always try to get shopped around. We've got some amazing, ideas and books. We've been working together, ever since. Our first collaboration was actually in middle school, where some very intelligent teacher had us in one class. Everyone started a story, and then it got passed to another class, and they added the second chapter, and then back, and then forth. So it was like a 4-part story where we were passing back and forth, and I got paired with Mike. And that's how, that was our first ever collaboration in fifth grade.
Wow.
And it was some story, and obviously Mike's a much better writer than I am.
In fifth grade, was he?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, Mike, yeah. But, Mike was also an artist, and, I was a better artist, so it worked out.
All right.
But, yeah, so he wrote this story, and then when I got it, I made it so that the kid in the story's parents got killed, and that really pissed him off. And so in his section, he made it so it was a dream. So, we were fighting back and forth even at that point. So the collaboration has been going for a very long time. So,
very nice.
So I've been doing comics ever since then.
Yeah. You call him up and critique his Transformers work.
Right, like, yeah.
Starscream would never do this. Yeah.
You fool.
That's wild.
And I went to art school at Rhode Island School of Design.
Okay.
And I studied for a year with Dave Mazzucchelli. Really, opened my mind to the comics as storytelling, because up until then I was just, drawing little gags or, drawing superheroes and stuff like that. And so, I kind of credit him with the majority of my ability to tell a story, which I think is probably my strong suit. And I was roommates at college with Paul Rivera. So,
wow. You're just like,
I know.
I was just good.
So, I've got so many famous friends who've all gotten famous ahead of me, and I'm just sitting around like, oh no,
I'm doing a webcomic.
Yeah. I went to school with Joe Quinones as well.
Wow, you just know everybody.
Yeah, I know, right?
What happened to you?
I just like telling jokes.
Where are you at on this relaunch, man?
I know. Yeah, it was great. And, senior year of college, Paulo's doing tryouts for Marvel, and I'm like, man, when am I going to get my tryout? And then I look at what I was doing, what he was doing. It's like, man, not he's even pretty, close. He's a phenom.
I love his painted work, but his pencil and ink stuff is just gorgeous. Yeah. He and Marcos Martin could draw Spider-Man from now until the end of time, and I would be very, very happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Those guys are, I think, very much out of the same style. Whenever he does, Paolo Rivera,
I must be thinking of someone else then.
He painted the Mythos books with that Paul Jenkins wrote.
Yeah, I don't see that along the lines of Marcos Martin at all.
Look at his pencil stuff.
Yeah, he did that Spider-Man story with Quesada, the 4-issue thing. I can't remember what it was called.
He and Spider-Man and Wolverine in the bar in wintertime. That was one of their stories.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
His pencil.
He's doing the new Daredevil with Mark Waid.
Yeah, I still don't see the Marcos Martin in that.
Well, the 4th issue.
You guys are crazy.
Marcos Martin is taking over. No, yeah.
No. You'll see it.
Look at it and you'll
see it.
Yeah, yeah. Very different than his painted stuff.
Do you use a lot of photo reference?
No. It's closer to.
Well, he's interesting because he.
Thinking of the guy that did Secret War.
When we were in college, he was all about Alex Ross. And so he did nothing but paint, he didn't really do any sequential stuff. He just did comics paintings, and they were just unbelievably professional, and it was just incredible. And here I am, and I was just, doing gag strips and stuff. I did an anthology of comics, of little shorts and all this kind of stuff about astronauts and all this weird stuff. And he was just doing these amazing paintings. And then he did Mythos, and you know, his painting's amazing. And I was just
beautiful.
You know, Paul's got a great sense of humor, and I'm just like, boy, this has got to be kind of boring, though. This has got to be kind of boring, just like painting this every day, like city streets. Like, he wasn't even doing many superheroes. Like, you know, his talents weren't real, because he's got a great sense of humor, and it wasn't coming out, like, at all in those books. And now he's going back to, you know, the drawing. He's more of an Alex Toth, you know, Dave, he was in Mazzucchelli's class with me, so Mazzucchelli stuff and, you know, brushy stuff. He's actually roommates with another friend of ours from college, Reed Johnson, or R. Kikuo Johnson, who did a book called Night Fisher from Fantagraphics. It's very brushy, amazing stuff. And so he's definitely going back to that kind of style, and more cartooning, and I think it suits him well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, you buds with all sorts of guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
It's funny because before C2E2, I thought that you were an East Coaster, and I think I even emailed you that.
Yeah.
It's,
I was for a little while. I mean, I went to school there, and then I moved to Boston. So, yeah, I was an East Coaster for a little while.
Okay, yeah, but you're Midwestern, you know, born and bred, so it's now here in Chicago. So
Detroit. Oh,
very cool.
That's right.
One of the things I want to know about God Hates Astronauts, the title.
Okay.
Yeah, please explain.
So I did a drawing once of an astronaut getting kicked in the face by an angel, and it exploding his helmet, you know, into the vacuum of space, because all his oxygen, and she was wearing a t-shirt, and I made it say God Hates Astronauts, and it just kind of, you know, stuck with me. I thought it was kind of funny. It was just kind of a play on God hates, you know, blah blah blah, whatever, fill in the blank, and I think it's kind of a funny thing to tongue-in-cheek of religion stuff.
I just wonder, because the comic has nothing to do with that. I mean, I'm sure
sort of ties into, and what, you know, the heavy-handed explanation is that if God made man and put him on the planet Earth, he probably wouldn't appreciate people that spent all their time trying to figure out how to leave the planet Earth.
Okay,
that's kind of my tongue-in-cheek thing. But really, it's just a throwaway title. I mean, I personally... people either love the title or they hate it, but I've never met anyone who loves the book and hates the title. So I kind of feel like if you like the title, you're going to like the book.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's Fair enough. It's more of a
I like
theme. The title is the theme of the book rather than what the book is about.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
For whatever reason, I always thought it worked, but I didn't understand it really either. Well, I kind of had that, like, I thought, I was like, well, it sort of makes sense if you know, I didn't think of it in the sense of, God hating, you know, astronauts because they're trying to leave Earth, but just the idea of like these superhero characters, super powered beings, and sort of, they don't seem like they're going through a really, like, great times in your book. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, their lives are not fantastic times. And it's like, well, maybe, you know, getting too close to the sun, sort of thing. You know, for whatever reason, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. I guess.
I also think backwards on most stuff, like the title of Blast Furnace, which to me immediately made me laugh and was immediately something that I thought was funny. Like, to have a comic be named Blast Furnace, like, because the first word, it sounds really exciting, and the second word is just kind of furnace, you know, but it's like a real thing, but it doesn't have anything to do with what it really is. But I just kind of thought, you know, like, he's a recreational thief. That's really exciting. And then on the other hand, he is, you know,
sort of mundane.
Yeah,
in other
just
ways,
mundane, yeah. Whatever. So it's like Blast Furnace, you know. And so it's like, yeah, I guess that kind of works. So.
And then you gave him a flaming tie.
Yeah, right. Because, you know,
sweet
Blast
mustache
Furnace.
And sunglasses. Yeah,
yeah. He's a cool dude.
Still counts.
Say goodbye.
All right. Well, hey, before we move on to talking about some comics we've been reading over the last month, want to finish up with Blast Furnace. Ryan, when does Blast Furnace hit computer consoles coming to everyone?
The digital stand.
That sounds so cool. When does it hit computer screens? Well, it's going to launch on my 30th birthday. Well, actually, the Monday closest to it. So it's June 27th. Of 2011.
When's your 30th birthday?
June 26th of 2011.
My wife is the 29th. Oh, it's not her 30th birthday, though.
Yeah.
It's her 29th birthday.
Okay. For the 8th time.
Or the 8th, 9th, 10th time.
Well, then I can tell her some stories about being old, then.
Yeah. Well, there you go. All right. And for people, and we'll follow up again near the end of the show, on Twitter, you are at God Hates Astronauts.
No, that was too long. So I am at Astronaut Hater.
That's okay.
Which is really fun because I actually follow several astronauts.
That's like
and
two
NASA.
Letters shorter.
Yeah. Astronaut Hater fit. God Hates Astronauts did not fit. That was too long.
So at Astronaut Hater, and then the website is God Hates Astronauts.
GodHatesAstronauts.com.
And BlastFurnace.com.
BlastFurnaceComic.com.
BlastFurnaceComic.com was taken.
Yeah, well, BlastFurnace.com has been taken by apparently a company that produces blast furnaces.
Bastards.
But they don't use it, so it's floating out there. So it's BlastFurnaceComic.com for now.
All right, and we will let
and
people know.
I will go out on a limb and say if you read God Hates Astronauts and Blast Furnace and don't like it, you have no soul. And you don't
you probably
and
you, don't like this
and
show.
You don't like comics.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you probably don't. Yeah, you probably hate me. So
yeah, and yeah,
fuck you anyway.
I would say if you don't like me from hearing me speak on this podcast, please just separate the art from the artist. They're two different entities. We don't exist in the same space.
I don't think you're controversial or anything.
Oh, I'm working up to it. I'm sure you can get there.
I just don't think you...
Ryan, I was hoping for a little more.
I was a little disappointed. I got some
stored away in case of emergency.
This is kind of the first date appearance.
He's just nice and
he's being all
he hasn't cursed at all. He's been very, you know, low-key.
Third time he's on the show, it's like, now let me tell you motherfuckers what's wrong with
exactly,
comics.
Yeah. We've seen that.
I'm storing it up. I have to have a reason for you to have me back eventually. So
it is always funny because, like, you know, we've been doing this for a while now, and it is always sort of like, I mean, and rightfully so, a lot of guys in comics that we've had on the show, they have plenty of opinions about the comic book industry, but it's not really healthy for their career to come onto our podcast and blast the comic book industry. So it's sort of interesting, you know. I mean, we hear it a lot. We hear a lot of stuff that people don't hear on the show, and you know, we can say whatever the fuck we want because we don't, you know, we got nothing, we got no skin in the game, right? You know, yeah, but we tend to foster, you know, that sort of, you know, that atmosphere tends to get people to open up a little bit, and then we've had a few people that have had to ask us to edit stuff out.
I've had the Sunday morning email. Remember whenever we were talking about this? If you don't mind. It's like, I already did it. Don't worry about it.
We're pretty conscientious about that.
Well, I tell you what. Let's talk about some comics. I have a few that I really enjoyed over the last month, actually the last week here. But Sal, would you like to start us off?
Sure. I will start with a book that came out this, I think it came out this week. I don't even know. Supreme Power, number one of four, the new miniseries, Max Line miniseries from Marvel.
Good, because I want to talk with you about should I buy it?
I think so. You were a fan of the original Supreme Power and the miniseries and all that stuff, the Straczynski stuff.
Dude, I like Squadron Supreme.
Yeah, well, back in the day, coming up
from that. But yeah, I love the Straczynski stuff.
Well, this is a new miniseries. It's written by Kyle Higgins with art by Manuel Garcia and Michael Lacombe. Lacombe, I think Lacombe.
Kyle Higgins, who's a good friend of Mike Costa.
Oh, is
just
he?
Just all tied all right. together.
Ryan actually went on a around the world RV trip with all of those guys.
Wow, interesting.
That was great. No, my whole career has been the guy who gets to go cool places and stand in the back and no one knows who he is, and I'm just like, hi, I'm friends with these people, and no one talks to me.
You're like the comic book guitar tech.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, I've been going to DC parties at comic shows. Like the New York City Con, I've gone to DC party the last 2 years. And the first year, because I go with Mike Costa, and he's got a plus one, so he brings me along, and I had a drunken conversation with Neil Adams for a half hour.
Nice.
And I don't remember a thing he said, because the whole time I was thinking, this is Neil Adams. This is Neil Adams who I'm talking to.
And that conversation turned into God Hates Astronauts number 3.
I shouldn't even be here. Yeah, so stuff like that happens to me. I've had a couple great conversations with Tom Fowler, not knowing his name at all, and then following his artwork.
Well, it's really easy to confuse him with like three other really tall, mustached, eyeglass-wearing comic book artists that are out there. Because there's like four or five of them. They all look exactly the same.
Yeah, he and Norton. He's Norton's Chris Somney.
They're like different renditions of the same clone gone awry.
So I had these great conversations with Tom Fowler at a couple of these DC parties.
Really? A great conversation with Fowler?
I grew up near the border of Canada, and we talked about Canadian television a lot, and it was a lot of fun. And
Red-Green Show?
What's that?
The Red-Green Show?
Yeah, no. Mr. Dress-Up and Today's Special. Lots of children's shows.
We've shared a hotel room with Tom Fowler, so we know way more about Tom than the general public.
But so here's the funny thing is that I love Tom Fowler's art. I didn't know I was talking to Tom Fowler both times, and then I was on his website going through his stuff, and I clicked on the About, and I saw a picture of him. I'm like, I know this guy. And then he started following me on Twitter. I'm like, oh, he totally remembers who I was. And turns out he didn't know who I was when we were talking, just like my art.
Like so
I was
like, talking.
That's one of my like big victories as an artist. Like, ooh, Tom Fowler likes my artwork. And it wasn't because he was forced to talk to me at a DC party. Like, that was really exciting.
Tom is incredibly talented. One of my favorite pages.
And one of the meanest Canadians I've ever met.
He is. There are not very many
surly Canadians out there that are not, well, I mean, professional hockey players aside, there are not very many surly Canadians, but he, sir, is a surly Canadian.
The folks in Vancouver are kind of showing their asses right now.
I would, too. I knew for
10 years now.
One of the first times I ever talked to Tom, he's like, I don't mind you Americans if you wouldn't, just as long as you would stop coming across the border and buying my mother's medication. stop buying.
You're fucking be lucky we just don't invade and just make you another state. Shut up.
There's this understanding that Canada is a suburb of America. Don't fuck with that, Tom.
Speaking of Canadians, surly Canadians, well, I made a joke with Lemire on Twitter. I don't know if he just thought it was stupid, but he's like, I'm going to Saskatoon in Calgary this weekend. I hope to see some of you there.
That's really a Canadian statement. Super Canadian.
And I was like, Saskatoon, come on, dude. It's not funny to make up places and tell your fans you're going to meet them there. Saskatoon can't be a real city.
That's not a real town.
I don't think he thought it was that funny. I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny.
And we'll get to Lemire in a minute. But tell us about that.
Isn't a Saskatoon a song written by a man named Saska?
It's a Saskatoon.
I'll bet you a dollar that within the next year we see a Saskatoon sound effect somewhere.
Saskatoon.
Saskatoon. Yeah.
It could happen.
That's a good one.
Happen.
All right, back to the comic book. God damn it. So anyway, Supreme Power number one. By Kyle Higgins, written by Kyle Higgins. It picks up pretty much right after the last Supreme Power storyline where Mark Milton, the Hyperion, kind of loses his mind and blows up the White House and goes crazy and disappears. And basically it's the story is Dr. Spectrum has now sort of taken on the mantle as the U.S.'s most powerful weapon. And he's running around
the world, which makes sense because he's a military guy.
Yeah, he was a captain in the military, and he, so he takes over, and as this story picks up, he's running around the country, you know, saving people, doing different things. But the media and the general public is sort of concerned and still leery of superpowers because of Mark Milton, Hyperion. And they're kind of now questioning him, wondering, you know, is the pressure of being, you know, everyone's savior going to do the same thing to you that it does, that it did to Hyperion? So he's sort of dealing with that, but at the same time, he's being sent in this particular issue, he's sent into Syria to take on a terrorist superpower who has ties to the Syrian government, like this dictator in Syria, and he goes there and fights him. But it was a really well written story, and
I'm really glad that they've picked up the existing storyline.
Yeah, they picked up the existing storyline, and it really felt very much like the original stuff that I liked so much. And when Chaykin did his run, and there was that other stuff that went in there after Straczynski, and
Guggenheim had done some stuff.
It kind of changed it went from a Max title to a non-Max title, and it really changed the feel of the book. And not in the sense of, like, you know, I had spoken earlier about, like, I don't care about, like, swear words or sex or, you know, hyper-violence in...
But the tone.
The tone of the book.
It was the realistic tone of, this is not the Marvel Universe. This is what would happen if...
If
Superman
lived in our world, yes. Realistically, yeah. Trying to take a realistic approach to a realistic perspective of how would a person react and how would we react to that person?
Media, corrupt governments, a lot of gray.
Straczynski had done that really well, and I think Higgins does that really well in this, giving you that same feeling of how this character, Dr. Spectrum. Specifically is dealing with all this pressure of now being very much human. And yes, he has, you know, these amazing powers, but, you know, he's still dealing with a lot of this pressure of...
And he's a patriot.
Yeah, and he's a patriot, and there's just a lot of things going on with him. So I really thought that it did a nice job of being a mature book and not resorting to what I think sometimes comics resort to when they think of mature or adult themes. All of a sudden has to be R-rated, has to be, like I said, hyper-violent or, you know, super-sexual or whatever. And this is much more of a mature theme in the sense of this is dealing with politics and, you know, the media and the reality
of... So what we said, unfortunately, mature books...
Are very immature a lot of times.
They appeal to the immature in us. And this is... When Supreme Power was really good, that's not what it was.
No, absolutely. It wasn't a gratuitous book. It was you know, trying. I mean, I think it really took from Class War, that book back in the day that, you know, kind of had that same feeling, and it really, you know, expanded on that. And reading this particular issue, it's issue one of a 4-issue miniseries, it really made me nostalgic for this universe. And I thought... It had so much potential initially when they first started out with Supreme Power and the Squadron Supreme relaunch in this Max line. I just thought there was so much potential to build on that universe and really, you know, you could go in so many directions and really tell mature stories about, you know, these people with fantastic powers and abilities living in our world. And it just got so fucked up. From Marvel and I don't know who's to blame, or, you know, I don't really care at this point. It doesn't matter. But
it's just a book that was so darn good, consistently good for like 2 years with the Max line, and then they made the transition to the regular Marvel imprint. And I was surprised that the quality and tone stayed
still
with
good.
It.
It was
there
still
were
good.
Great miniseries. There was a really good Nighthawk miniseries, which I think that's the one that Guggenheim did that had to deal with the Darfur in Africa. The whole genocide region. And ethnic cleansing there, and the the Hyperion mini. The mini series were really good. That kind of dovetailed off of the main line, and just so many good characters. The Power Princess. It's kind of a crazy fucking character.
But once again, it's just sort of a different look at these characters that we know. I mean, obviously it's Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, and you know mm-hmm. these different characters. The Flash and whatever.
And I like Nighthawk because he's based in Chicago, which I thought was
there you
cool.
go. Yeah. But I thought this issue was really good, and I hope that more comes from it, that it does well, and that Marvel does more of the Supreme Power universe.
I'm glad it's back under Max, because it was the kind of title I really liked at Max.
Yeah, now they just have like Punisher Max is about the only other title.
Deadpool Max.
Oh yeah, Deadpool. Yeah. I don't read that one. So
yeah,
but yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I thought nice. That, and art wise, it was good. It's obviously not Gary Frank, who was amazing on the original book. Yeah, I mean,
very few people are Gary Frank.
Right,
yeah.
but it was good. I like the art.
What is he doing these days, anyway?
I don't know.
The last he was
thing
doing was
action. Yeah, was I read all the action stuff. I haven't seen him
and
since.
And he was
then.
Doing the Secret Superman Secret Files with Johns.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, he hasn't done it. I
didn't see him on any of the
reboot.
The reboots.
He's awesome. I mean,
Gary Frank. Yeah. I loved his Hulk. Stuff.
You know, he probably got smart and is doing some work in Hollywood. A lot less work for a lot more money for a little while, and then I'll come back.
Exactly. Batman Earth 1. Batman what?
Earth 1. Batman Earth 1.
Oh, Batman Earth 1 with Jeff Johns, which he's probably about done with that.
I don't even know what a Batman Earth
it's,
1 is.
It's after the Straczynski Superman Earth 1.
I don't even... I have no
Batman,
recollection.
The OGNs.
Is he doing that?
Yeah, he and Jeff Johns are doing
that. I thought they weren't doing any more of those.
They're doing the Batman.
Now they are because the Superman did so well.
Yeah, because it was like a New York Times
bestseller.
That
seems like it changed everything. I think that was a real precursor to this whole reboot anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh.
Because comic book fans hated that thing and it sold like gangbusters.
It's like, ooh, so maybe our market isn't our market.
Believe it or not.
Maybe there are people out there that read Superman.
Want a good entry point.
That's a big thing.
We've talked about, that's the thing with DC is we've talked about so much of what they're doing. We've talked about it for the last 5 years in the show. Over and over again, different things that we thought, hey, this is what, they should do. This is what they... And they are now. They are. It's like, I'm not, I can't blast them for any of it. It's like, yeah, fuck, go for it.
Hey, they're doing it. It's hard to... It's a big ship, and it's hard to turn a big ship.
Sure. Takes a long time, a lot of effort.
Yep.
A lot of times I do feel like a dude with a beer sitting on the couch watching baseball... Yelling at the manager, why don't you change the lineup to this? Why is that guy still hitting today? Yeah. And it's just like, I just have to have faith, a little bit of faith, that the people that have been doing it for 60 years know what they're doing. But then you also have to be like, well, maybe they're not open to new ideas, and it's just like it's so strange.
There's no one answer. There's no magic bullet. There's a problem with every single answer.
I'm sure these guys are considering, at this point, I mean, financially, their jobs are on the line. I'm sure everybody is considering every single angle that they can, and they have meetings, and everyone has to agree, and it's a huge committee.
Harder than it looks.
Yeah, and stockholders and all this stuff that all have to come together and decide on this stuff. So, people get as angry as they want, but it's hard to change anything.
I think a lot of times, I really feel like comic book fans, as much as I've... said shitty things about comic book fans on this show. and been hard on comic book fans. I honestly, though, feel that one thing we don't really understand as comic book fans is that we are much more discerning readers than the general public. Mm-hmm. We're much more critical, and we want much better stories than what the general public will think is good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't want to bash anything else, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff out.
There's a lot of passion in comic book fans, and we've been doing it for a long time. And it's a thin line between thinking that you know it all and realizing that you just
But yeah, I think the general public also is much more forgiving than we are. I think that they're very, you know, it's like a story doesn't have to make sense with 40 years of continuity for people to enjoy it. You know what I mean? I think that's the that's one of the problems with comic book fans. Like we've twisted things, our perspective, so much into now everything that comes out every month has to be exactly what I want it to be.
Yeah.
Because I'm just so unforgiving now in my relationship with comics.
I'm as much to blame as anyone.
Yeah,
that we have a tendency of looking at what we've read before and elevating it to a level that it probably doesn't deserve to
be. Well, yeah, getting old. I mean, that's just getting older. Yeah, everybody looks at their own, you know,
nostalgic, you know, remembrances. Yeah. That's not my Barry Allen. It's like, have you ever read like Silver Age Barry Allen?
It's terrible.
Comics?
It's very good.
Other than Tom Caters, no one enjoys that.
No, but Tom understands that. Tom is very kind. A buddy of ours did Tom versus the Flash, a podcast forever, and Tom is very aware of that. And
no, I know. I just think sometimes we
that's not Clark Kent.
We don't realize, like, I'm probably one of the harshest critics around.
Yes,
about. I was going to qualify that, you fucker.
No, you are. You hold things up to. We were talking about beer, and you're like, I'm not going to drink that Miller High Life because it's.
Why you got to out me? Why you got to?
I'm outing you. I'm outing. No, you hold things up to a very high standard, and I think that there needs to be much of that.
Well, I'm a huge critic of like Twilight.
Why?
It's terrible.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I just think it's really, really terrible. And I have you know nieces and nephews and people that around me that read that and love it and you know just will soak it up. And I just cannot understand it. And that's something that I've been trying to sort of like realize. Like it doesn't, you know, like no matter what I think is good or bad doesn't fucking matter. And at the end of the day, it's what the most people get out of it. You know, I can say something's good. I can say something's bad. It doesn't mean anything. It does, you know.
Sometimes I feel sorry for you. I envy you. No,
Christ, what the fuck is this?
A lot of times I envy you because you see things in comics and movies and novels that I wish that I could see. You deconstruct them and you get to the heart of them very well. I'm kind of in the ignorance is bliss camp.
Yeah, it can spoil the fun. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm able to, because I'm dumber, to enjoy things a little bit more sometimes.
Yeah, but I'm retraining myself to sort of just, you know.
You know, we're talking about lettering earlier, and I'm really studying lettering in comics, and now when I see really good lettering, I get excited about it. And it's like, oh, that's that's neat. That is very cool what they did there. But now bad lettering just sticks out like such a huge sort.
Bad lettering and bad coloring are like the two cardinal sins of comics that
they're everywhere.
It's everywhere. And someone who reads comics will say, I don't like this book, and maybe they won't even know why. It's like a little thorn in your side. The bad lettering, bad coloring can kill a good script and can kill good penciling and inking.
Yeah.
Like, hands down. I don't letter well or color very well. So I'm working on that. Sorry, everybody. It's something that people don't consider very much. And I hate how dismissed those jobs are. And as a person who has to create my entire book from scratch, lettering is very hard.
It is. And
coloring well is extremely hard. And inking well is also extremely hard. And I find it so strange and I kind of sad that people are involved in the production of comics and don't get the notoriety they deserve.
They're the offensive, we'd say it all the time, they're the offensive linemen of comics.
Yeah.
You only notice it when it's bad. You know, looking at lettering in comics, it kind of occurred to me that there's so much of it that's almost subconscious, is that whenever you start doing something at, you know, 10, 12 years old, 8 years old, whatever, reading comics, and as I've been kind of watching and really paying attention
to stuff.
The language of comics is amazing, and there are just little things that...
And completely underused, if I might say so for myself.
And
oh,
it's
my
like,
gosh.
Wow, there is a language to comics because, you know, at this point, we've been reading them so long. You hand a comic to someone and say, here, read this, it's really good. And they open it, and it's like, blah, 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 sure. to them. And you're like, no, it's just a comic mm-hmm. book. And it's just like the way that tails come off of word balloons, or you know, you can tell if someone is talking to someone on a phone by the type of balloon and the type of tail.
But it's just the iconography of comics is super important.
Absolutely.
But don't you think it's we've gotten to the point where it's such a deconstruction of that kind of stuff? I mean, looking back on comics from, you know, its most popular era, that craft was not there. I mean, these things were pumped out.
Well, that's where the craft came from.
Come on. You look at...
EC Comics or...
I mean, you look at... Back before that. There was not a whole... There was no lettering craft in EC Comics. That was shoved in there anywhere they could.
Oh, they lettered it before they drew it.
Yeah.
Well, you're looking at the wrong stuff. What you need to look at is old newspaper strips. His newspaper strips, they would play with lettering and the form of comics all over the place. Like people reaching out of one panel into a panel that is yet to happen.
Well, no,
to
I'm
grab
not,
something
I,
to come back.
I'm
or,
not
you
talking
know,
about. I'm not talking about what is good or bad
effects.
Or what's quality or what's.
Oh, yeah,
but
sure.
I'm talking about what is once again going back to sort of the theme of the show. It seems like
how intuitive is it?
Well, not only that, but who like. And this is going to sound kind of shitty, but does it fucking matter?
But it's there. Okay.
But here, to who? It matters to you as a comic book creator. It matters to me as a 30-year comic book fan.
Here's another sports analogy. Okay, we're watching a Bears game, and you and I are watching the Bears game, and the Bears are getting killed on defense. And I know that they're getting killed on defense. I'm watching the game, but you are like, oh, the cover two is not working here. You know why they're getting killed on defense. I know that they are getting killed on defense. It doesn't matter. Does that make any sense at all?
No, it does make sense to some degree, but what I'm saying is that at one time comics sold in the millions of copies.
Sure.
And those were the days when comics were produced so fast.
Well, they were, with very little craft. Yeah, but they were a primary entertainment vehicle.
This is like pre-TV,
pre-video games.
But what I'm saying is that this stuff matters to us because we've been studying this stuff for 30 years, 20 years, 15 years, whatever. To once again, you know, going back to hopefully what DC is trying to do with the relaunch of grabbing new readers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that any of that matters to them. I don't know that you put a comic book I know in the craft of it and in the sense of myself as someone that appreciates good craft in comics, good art, good writing. You know, I've studied it, you know, as much as I can in my lifetime. I know that it matters to us, but does it matter to anyone outside of that? Does it matter?
I think subconsciously it does.
Yeah.
If something is good, it is good, and it's a craft.
But who's to say what's good?
Well, I mean, it's a craft that's been refined over it's 80 years now.
Yeah,
you also
have to remember that the stat of when comics hit their boom wasn't because the comics were good; it was because people thought comics were collectible still.
I'm talking way before that.
Yeah,
we're talking like
30s, 40s.
Yeah, I'm talking 30s, 40s.
But everyone read comics, where millions
of people of all age ranges read comics.
Yeah,
and it was because it was something different, and it was interesting and exciting.
They're creative,
but they weren't. It wasn't because of the craft of them.
I don't know. The craft is really high back then. The people that were working on those were professional illustrators. And we're cutting their teeth and just inventing stuff in the storytelling, like on the page.
Some of it was. The majority of it was not.
I think so though. I think there's a lot of amazing stuff, and some of it doesn't have the flair.
I mean,
you certainly had
guys that were intuitively creating some amazing mm-hmm. stuff, and like you said, there were illustrators that couldn't get illustration work and were going to comics to make a living.
But I don't know. I mean, they weren't spending the time on it to try and make the best looking comic sure. book that they could. They were just pumping out work.
Well, okay.
To get it done.
And I'm gonna bring.
And we can look at it now.
I'm gonna bring us back. What do some people say is Ryan's best work?
His best work?
Yeah, his 24-hour comic set. Yeah, whenever sure. he has to.
What I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, the average reader in comics, even today, I don't think notices or. Knows what is good coloring, bad coloring, good writing, bad writing.
I think they know what is bad coloring in the sense of that it will affect their reading. I don't think that it's like I look at Chris Ware as a person who plays with the form and is a genius, but the form is very self-aware and takes you out of the story because of what it's doing. Like when you're reading, you know, these words which are, you know, bending into each other and taking you from panels, like, you know, from right to left, from down to up, like all over the place. Like,
and it's not incredibly accessible.
Right. It's not accessible. And he's doing amazing, innovative stuff. But when there's really good lettering, like, and really good coloring, that enhances the story. And you may not know why. You know, I mean, this happens in all media. Like, not everyone's a critic, but even with not everyone being a critic, people still enjoy stuff that is well-crafted. They don't have to understand why. And I think that good lettering will help you. Good coloring does help, like, all in all. And I think it does make a better product. Thus, more people who read it will enjoy it. Doesn't mean it's the most accessible thing you are creating. Like, something being accessible and having numbers is different than something being the best product it could be.
I think it's a very fine line. And I'm kind of, you know, in between that is that, you know, I think that the quality needs to be high, but it needs to be accessible. And that, you know, that kind of goes to what Sal's saying. It's like, at what, you know, where's the tipping point of experimental and creative and,
sure.
And you know, the attention to detail and quality versus accessibility. You know, right. we talk about Twilight. Twilight is a piece of shit. But it is incredible. But
it's incredibly accessible.
But incredibly accessible.
Well, yeah. It's written specifically for, I mean, it's
very accessible.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, it's for a certain group of, you know, people. I mean, it's written specifically, I mean, targeted brilliantly in some way. Yeah. It's terribly written.
Yeah.
But in some way, she's a fucking genius in how well she crafted that story for a very specific type of person.
Yeah. You could say the same thing about J.K. Rowling with Harry Potter. Harry Potter, you know, I think, obviously, better
writer.
We would say better writer, better product. Still, I mean, it's, you know, she's no Proust or, you know, whatever. You know, pick a great writer. Yeah,
she wasn't really doing anything that new. She was just taking a bunch of elements, putting them together, and marketing it perfectly
and
for
it
a given audience.
Incredibly accessible. Yeah. So, you know, you can name a great writer. You know, Elmore Leonard. You know, whatever. It's riding that line between quality and accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, I agree.
With both of you.
Yes. that people will inherently know if something is good, but it also has to be.
I don't think people do at all. Yeah. I think people absolutely do not inherently know quality over non-quality. I mean, you talked, Jesus Christ, like I said earlier, a movie like Fast Five
was,
you know, does a, and hey, I can enjoy a movie like that, no problem. The Rock and Vin Diesel running around, driving cars, Jackass, the movie. Yeah, I got no problem enjoying that myself. Yeah. But there's also a part of me that says, "Yeah, this is not a good movie. I'm not going to recommend this as a good film.
Is it a good movie? It was successful.
Well, that's what I mean. A lot of people have fun watching it. What I'm saying is, what is good, what is bad? Everybody has their own, you know, judgments of that. And I think the average person doesn't give a shit.
Hey, man, McDonald's 20 billion served.
Yeah,
and then
pretty much.
Then you go to, you
not
know,
that people should stop trying to make is the best books, or best stories, best whatever that they can. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we look at, like you brought up Chris Ware. I think, like you said, Chris Ware is a genius in what he does.
Yeah.
but only for a very small segment of people that are going to appreciate it.
Hey, man, he studied under Mazzucchelli. You know, I think Asterius Polyp is one of the most amazing books of certainly the last decade.
I mean, you want to talk to a guy who understands comics. God. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Unbelievable, brain.
How many people have read Asterius Polyp? I mean, it gets touted
75.
Yeah.
You know, but it did get on, like, book review lists, so some people outside of the comics medium did purchase it. Yeah,
that and $2 will buy you a grande cup of coffee at Starbucks, right. You know?
But something like Bone.
Absolutely. Bone is fantastic, but that's kind of like where Mazzucchelli meets Twilight. You know, it's completely accessible, and the craft of it is. I mean, Jeff Smith is amazing cartoonist, amazing storyteller, and that Bone in particular is so accessible to adults and to kids.
Yes,
I mean it's
which is it's a masterpiece. Which is a more brilliant work, you know,
Asterius Polyp or Bone?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
my whole point. It's like us three sitting here, obviously an artist and a writer, guy who creates his own comic books. I've studied comics, most of my life, and certainly for the last 10 years, I've, spent way more time trying to analyze comic books and the craft of comic books than I ever fucking should. We talk about this constantly, and it's like, well, what, to us, certainly, Asterius Polyp is brilliant and genius because of what he does.
You finally read it?
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt the guy's a genius, but it's
complete mastery of the form.
No question. But is it a good story?
Yeah, I think it is.
I don't know. I don't know that it is. Yeah. I don't know that it is. I don't know that it is. It is so not accessible.
The
reader has to work to make that story work.
And for me, and that it's intentional. Does not.
Yeah. Sure. Well, Fountainhead is one of my favorite novels. And I'm not ranting in my philosophies, but Asterius Polyp is probably the closest thing I've ever read in comics that is on an intellectual level with Fountainhead, and there are a lot of the same themes in there, and so. At that point, I don't give a fuck if it's accessible or not. I loved it. I don't care.
That's fine. I'm not talking about whether you loved it or not.
Yeah.
That's not the point. The point isn't whether you enjoyed it.
I don't think Mazzucchelli cared if it was accessible or not.
That's not the point either. I have no interest in what he wanted to do with it or what he didn't want to do with it. That's not how
not
I'm judging
discussion.
It.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not how I judge a work is what the artist intended with it is what
you just judge if it's good or not.
I judge it whether or not it's good, whether or not it, and like I said, as I've gone on in life with it, my concept of what is good has changed a lot, and the more I look at story, the more I look at entertainment, the more I see value in affecting the most amount of people, not affecting the smallest group the most, but the largest group.
So why did you have me on your show?
Yeah.
Because honestly, I am a person that made something for myself, really, for people with sensibilities like myself. Like, I was very aware that what I'm making does not appeal to that many people, Like, I think
that's a mistake in your thinking. I think that your work could appeal to a lot more people than you think it does. I think that your work is actually much more accessible to an average person on the street than a lot of mainstream comics. And I think that's just symptomatic of us in this industry of, like, this is what mainstream these are what comics are, right?
Brian, we believe that you appeal to the lowest common denominator.
No, I'm not talking about that.
I'm trying to get my comic in every McDonald's on the back of the placemat on the Yeah.
Well, hey, there's something to be said
Big
for
Mac.
That's pretty good. That may be used. But Blast Furnace, I got 252 pages to fill sound effects. So,
I think there's certainly a tipping point. I mean, there's certainly, I don't want to just see, like, mass-produced, homogenous work that appeals to everybody in the lowest common denominator. But I just think, I've said this before. I always felt that, as much as I love Watchmen, and it is my favorite comic of all time, I think it is the the greatest comic book ever.
Pretty darn perfect.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Except for all the purple.
I still feel that The Dark Knight Returns is a better comic book.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah.
Because it is much more accessible to people than Watchmen is. I think it is as groundbreaking and as revolutionary as Watchmen is, but is much more accessible. And that's just my opinion. I know most people are going to disagree with me in that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
But that's just sort of where my sensibility lies, is that I think finding that balance point of this can appeal to everyone, but is still of quality, is where that's what you got to hit.
It's why I love the first Die Hard movie.
Oh, there you go.
One of the best movies ever made. One of the start to finish, one of the best told, most fun stories there is.
Cheers. And is that going to show up on the Roger Ebert 100 best movies of all time?
I don't say it's the best movie ever made. I say it's the best movie ever made in terms of entertainment. In terms of just being an entertaining movie.
No, Jaws.
Well, see, with
Jaws
is really good. With what you're saying, I mean, you're kind of trying to find the line between how accessible versus how like important and how intelligent. Yes. You know, so it's kind of like, what would you recommend to someone who doesn't read comics? What would be like the first thing you would say?
Because what kind of movies do you like?
That would probably be if someone doesn't read comics, like, what should I read? That would be the
what
best,
do you like? I mean,
most
what, you
accessible
know,
kind of thing, right? I mean,
sure.
Like someone's like, I want to read a superhero comic. What would you tell them? Would you tell them Watchmen? Would you tell them Dark Knight?
No.
Would you?
I'd probably go with like Year One, you know, like Batman Year One. Or you know, like, I don't know. I'm trying. Jeez.
A superhero comic.
Man of Steel.
Favorite Superman comic of all time was the Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons for The Man Who Has Everything.
Man Has Everything, yeah.
I love that story.
Amazing.
I love that story.
Yeah, it's cute.
More than cute. It's more than cute. Okay, so good.
Mr. Twilight.
But is it? I don't know.
I love that story. When was the last time you read that?
Not that long ago. Not that long ago.
They updated it in the Superman.
That's when I read it.
The animated series.
Yeah.
When it came out, they republished
the hardcover.
Yeah.
I love that story. It's
All-Star Superman would probably be something that I would definitely recommend to people.
You know, that's an interesting one.
That book's genius and it's accessible.
And that's why
I think it's
Grant
great.
Morrison work ever.
And there's so much subtlety to it in all of Frank Quitely's compositions and the writing. There's so much subtlety.
Yeah. The first page is one of my favorite pages ever, just because it was a three panel origin of Superman that had everything that you needed to know.
I loved it, and the most amazingly descriptive drawings to make Clark Kent Superman and Superman Clark Kent and have them be so distinct and every little bit of their being
made you believe the bubbling oaf
and it's amazing precision and expertly done. And people would pick up on it, not pick up on it. I don't know, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't affect the story, even if you don't pick up. If you've never read a Silver Age Superman story, if you'd never read a Superman book in your life, and you could still pick that up, and it's still a very good story, without having any prior knowledge of it. Yeah. And I think, like I said, I just think that's the sweet spot. I think why Pixar movies are so amazingly effective.
There's another thing. Pixar movies.
Unbelievable craft, but
the minutia.
Absolutely.
Oh my
gosh. And I think that's where I don't see that many comics like that. I don't see that many comics that are
There should be more comics like The Incredibles.
Absolutely. Yeah. And hopefully there will be. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So it's a brave new world.
Standing on the stage, a boy started shaking. In his tail back, the place started quaking. I ain't got long to go now, baby.
Can I talk about a comic I really love?
Yes. Please, let's get off this subject before I make more of an ass of myself.
No. We talked a little bit about Jeff Lemire, and Jeff is an old friend of the show. We've been a fan of his work since.
Sense of humor when it comes to Saskatoon.
None at all.
And, oh, he's Canadian?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He lives in Toronto. Man. Big Leafs fan. Yeah.
Never mind.
Jeff, who came to both Windy City Comic Cons, by the way, came all the way from Toronto to our little show here in Chicago, which you would have been invited to if we were still doing it, which maybe. But anyway, Jeff did Essex County for Top Shelf and has a fantastic series from Vertigo called Sweet Tooth, and the third volume, the third trade paperback, just came out a couple weeks ago, and son of a bitch almost had me crying.
Wow.
It was,
but to be fair,
I'm a little bit of a girl. I'm a little bit of a girl. just a gut wrenching scene that I'm just like, damn it, Jeff, you son of a bitch. I had just watched like two episodes of The Killing, and then read.
Oh God, that'll depress you.
Yeah, and then I read the entire volume of Sweet Tooth, and I was like, I want to go drown myself in the bathtub.
No shit.
I'm just. So there's your uplifting recommendation for Sweet Tooth.
That sounds great.
If you're depressed and want to, if you want to start your wrist,
no. Tom described Essex County as Saw for Canadians.
I think that's what he's talking
about. Sweet Tooth is the story of Gus, who is a boy deer hybrid living in a post-apocalyptic world where there has been a plague that has pretty much wiped out like 90% of the population. Think like The Stand with animal human hybrid babies.
Cool.
You just made all my problems seem very insignificant.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. And Gus, which is also the name of Jeff's son, is Gus. Yeah, yes, Gus Lemire. Gus is a hybrid boy who has grown up in seclusion with his father in the woods of Nebraska, and his father passes away, and kind of his big rule is, Gus, don't ever leave the woods. Stay here, live out your years here in the cabin. We have everything we need, and don't ever leave,
because
kids never listen, and his father knows about the horrors that are outside of this preserve that he's set up. And well, Gus, being a kid, ventures out, meets a man named Jeopard, and their adventure begins. He thinks that Jeopard is a good man who's going to kind of step into the role of his father. Ends up that Jeopard has other plans, and that is to hand Gus over to some very, very evil people for some different reasons. And so this is where Gus's story picks up, as he's in this compound with a scientist and some very, very nasty people that are experimenting on him, thinking that he and the rest of the hybrids will lead them to the cure for this plague. Okay. And this third volume is the story. It's called Animal Armies, and it's the story of Gus and him meeting the other hybrid children and trying to find a way out. And it picks up the story of Jeopard, who may not be a great guy, but he's not as evil as we thought, that the things that he did to Gus, he actually did for his own reasons, which may not have been as evil as possible. And he's realized that that they were pretty crappy, and so he may be on his way to save Gus. And lots of crazy things happen.
All right, can you not tell the whole damn book?
What happens on the last page?
Jesus Christ.
There's like five boy dog
hybrids
that
mutants
are, yeah, mutants and
freaks.
There's a scene with Jeopard, and you kind of find it makes you very sympathetic to him. I don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy or just a guy.
No, that sounds like a good character.
Yeah, and there's a scene in there, and I don't want to spoil it, that it just makes you want to cry for him, because he makes a decision in there that no one ever wants to be faced with. and it was just a gut-wrenching scene. And I was like, for a comic to make me feel like that is... That very rarely happens.
Yeah.
And I set it down, and I was like, well, Mary, you son of a bitch. It's, you know...
You Canadian bastard.
You got to get that guy on the phone and do some talking to him.
He's... it's like, God damn it. Yeah, it's really good. It was a gut-wrenching scene that made the entire volume worth it, because it made Jeopard so sympathetic... And wait, you hope that he emerges from it.
Is Jeopard a jaguar leopard hybrid?
No, but he is a former hockey
player. He should be.
He's a former hockey player
yeah.
who was an enforcer in the NHL.
Goon?
Yeah, he was a goon in the NHL. Yeah. And so this is him in the post-apocalypse. So, yeah, Sweet Tooth continues to be a really good series, kind of in the line of good finite series.
Was it Tony Twist who Tom McFarlane pissed off through Spawn?
Well, McFarlane created a character called Tony Twist. Who was kind of a goon that dressed up in a tutu.
Right.
And the Twister was not amused.
No, he sued him.
Yeah, absolutely. Sued him. He was a blue.
Yeah, so the very unknown hockey enforcer, Jeff Leppard.
Jeopard.
He's going to be very mad.
Yes, you bastard.
Jeff Leppard. Jeff Leppard, pretty good band, too.
I have a signed Tony Twist hockey puck.
You really?
Wow. Yes, I do.
Wow. That's... Is it signed by the guy from Spawn or the...
The actual hockey player.
Maple Leaf player.
Yeah, I should get Todd McFarlane to sign it. That would be awesome.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be worth what, like $8?
Like maybe $4.50 on eBay.
Did you trade him for that ball he's got?
Oh, yeah. The really worthless one now.
Yeah.
It's still worth something. Yeah. Come on. I don't know.
One day we'll find out Tom McFarlane was on steroids when he created Spawn. And all my Spawn 1's going to be worth nothing.
Have you ever seen Tom McFarlane? He was not on steroids.
Comic steroids.
His fingers are like...
Marketing steroids.
Huge fingers. Very prolific. Yeah. So yeah, Sweet Tooth continues to be really, really good. All right, Mr. Brown.
Yes.
Talk to us about
reading
comics.
Anything good?
What I'm reading that I constantly can't wait for the next issue, and there is a second trade has just been released. Is Brian Hurt and Cullen Bunn's The Sixth Gun.
We have talked about it several times. We are fans.
So I have very little to say then.
we have talked all about that book.
You know, I crave good storytelling. And as I've obviously pointed out, I'm a big... Everything's got to be correct in a story for me to really like it, all the way down to the lettering. And
so you're Excel.
Yeah. every I think that everything about that book
the lettering.
I think everything about that book is perfectly done. I don't have a single complaint with it. I think it's 100% entertaining. I think it is especially in the first book, the amount of fear that I physically... It was actually causing me to feel fear and dread toward the impending doom of the marauding horsemen coming after them. Like, incredibly well told. Very, very scary villains. Very likable, cast of heroes and...
Anti-heroes.
Anti-heroes, yes. And just a great concept. There's absolutely nothing that I would pick out about that book that I don't like.
You know who owns the original art for the first cover?
Jesus Christ.
No, I don't. Really? Did you steal it?
No, I did not steal it.
When you grab it, does it help you visualize Brian Hurt drawing it? Do you see it in red in your eyes?
Yeah, it's in my mind's eye. There's... Yeah, I love that book.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Totally awesome. And that is the type of book that I want to create. You know, like something that is ongoing and an enveloping story, and you can just, you know, has some sort of emotional impact, and just you can really get invested in it. And
it's pitch perfect.
How do you feel about
perfect.
World War II stories?
My buddy Xander Cannon and I have been working on a book together, and we really want it to have that kind of feel of The Sixth Gun in terms of how well that story is told and you know, just the pacing, it's everything. It's just like,
this guy drops more names than Suntress.
Yeah, I know. You need the bell. My buddy, Paulo Rivera, Xander Cannon.
Well, I'm just saying Xander is an actual writer, and I'm not. No, I'm just saying, like, a book like this, the book like Six Gun, I can't write at all. So, like, you know, I try to latch on to people that like my artwork and be like, hey, let's work on a book together so that we can, so I can actually make something that isn't more than just sound effect jokes and people getting punched in the face a lot. Which, by the way, if you look at my stuff,
wrong with that
almost
either.
Every single joke is about someone getting punched in the face. Like,
nothing wrong with that.
That's all I got.
It worked for the Three Stooges, dude.
That's
mean,
there you can get tons of mileage out of that.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah. So if I mean, really, I would love books like The Sixth Gun to be the future of comics, because a book like Sixth Gun is something that is self-contained and something that is a great idea, and it starts well, and it has, you know, a very good conclusion to the first book, but then there's more, and, you know, it can keep going on, and, you know, it's a genre book that, you know, can attract people that like horror, people that like
Westerns,
period pieces, yeah. People, yeah, Westerns, you know, Americana stuff, and, you know, action adventure, you know, slight touches of romance maybe are starting to peek in every here and there. And
nah, her love life's a fucking mess.
Yeah. So yeah, it's
doesn't make it any less of a love life. Whose love life? You know, shit.
So there's a book, like, if I were going to be talking to someone and they don't read comics, I was like, what comics should I read? Start with Six Gun.
Did you read The Damned?
I've never read The Damned.
Oh, you should read The
Damned. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's definitely on my list.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, that's
Cullen's got a new book out. You were talking about
really, really good. OGN, very different in tone from The Damned or The Sixth Gun.
Yeah.
It's kind of a humorous EC homage in a lot of ways, and I'm only about a third of the way through it. It's The Tooth with Matt Kent, and I believe that there is a co
Spice.
Super Spy and
Three Story.
What's great? Great OGN.
One of my favorite guys.
Yeah, you had a great interview with Matt about that. But yeah, it's a humorous homage to EC Comics in a lot of ways.
Oh, really?
That's yeah, fun. It's about a
who's publishing that?
Oni. It's from Oni Press. Yeah. It's about what I've gotten through so far. It's about a guy who. Basically becomes a symbiote for a magically growing tooth man called The Tooth. Yeah.
Not ironic at all.
And the Tooth is a total badass. He's he will rend limbs from people, which I think rend was another favorite Ryan
rend.
Brown sound effect. But yeah,
that's a deep cut. Deep cut going way back.
it's crazy. I mean, it is almost.
Is it out? Is that out?
Yeah,
now?
It's out. It's out from Oni. It really kind of defies
logic.
Description and logic. It is it's a nutty tale about a force of nature called the Tooth, and done in total like 1950s, as Matt Kent is very good at designing very aged looking books. I mean, it's down to like the CMYK printer marks are alternate throughout the pages.
Okay.
So it looks like it's a very rough
cut.
He always
adds elements like that to
yeah,
stuff.
Printing errors are intentionally included in it.
I like
and
that's
and,
cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
That kind of stuff. Everything looks very aged in it. Like you're reading a book that's probably, you know, 60 years old or so.
Yeah.
It's yeah, but it's nuts. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll like it. You'll like it.
I'll check
it's
it out.
You know, anything that Matt Kent does has this very left of center feel to it.
Yeah.
But it feels old and nostalgic, but kind of in a
fresh and new way.
No, not in a fresh and new way, but it's like it feels lost almost. It's yeah.
I don't know what you mean. He's the only other guy that I, well, there's a couple of guys that
give me the same sort of feeling that he does with his work is Vasila Lolos. He did I think he's Argentinian, and he did a book about a train. I can't remember what the hell it's called now. I talked about it on an episode probably 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And they did like one, it was a small graphic novel, and there was supposed to be more, and I never saw more come out from him. But he same kind of like esoteric, you know, detached feeling you get from it. Like it's not quite, you know, it's
kind of like a modern day big band, you know. It's like it's old, right, but it's new, and it's
God, what's the director? Fuck, I can't think of anything right now.
Wait for it.
No, Lynch.
Oh, David Lynch?
Yeah, like when he would do, you know, when he would do scenes about, you know, that same sort of thing, like something retro, but
just
a weird, skewed sort
like
of
new, like a Tim Burton Edward Scissorhands kind of.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, suburbia. What I mean? Like, it's just like, I know what you're talking about. Like, it's old. You have the nostalgia.
But it wouldn't have happened then.
But it never, it's too bizarre. Like, there's a weird, bizarre twist on it, but it feels familiar. Yeah. But not quite. It's like nostalgic dream.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. How's exactly. That? It's okay. Like this is patterned after an EC comic that EC would have never fucking made.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So
I know what you mean.
Yeah. That sounds awesome.
It is really awesome. It is really awesome. So
very cool.
Where are we at?
I got another comic I can talk about, and it's not even the comic itself wasn't all that particularly good, but there was
are so good at the ringing endorsements. Yeah. Sweet Tooth will make you want to drown yourself in a bathtub, and this comic was not particularly good.
Well, there's two comics I want to mention. Like, how about honorable mention? Flashpoint Legion of Doom number one, not a particularly good comic,
but did you enjoy it?
No. Except for I got to the last scene.
Yeah.
The last scene in the book was almost made it reading the whole thing worthwhile.
So, like the inverse of a David Lynch movie.
Yeah, exactly.
or a Stephen King.
And
book.
I apologize. It's written by Adam Glass, art by Rodney Buscemi and Jose Marzan. I don't know. It wasn't horrible. I thought some of the writing was. The plot was actually okay. The dialogue was not good.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a character, Heatwave. A villain in DC Universe.
It's a Flash rogue.
Yeah. He murders somebody, gets put into prison, and then he's trying to he's put into this like super high security prison, whatever, and he's trying to hatch a way out of it. Is basically the plot, and it's okay. It's like I said, it's not terrible. It's okay. Dialogue not so great, but at the end of it, you kind of find out part of what his plot is, and basically. He hires Clue Master. He pays Clue Master to get arrested and thrown in jail and mule something in for him. But what he mules in is Plastic Man. And the last scene is basically Plastic Man like coming out of this dude's mouth.
And it's Flashpoint, so
yeah. So it's like an evil Plastic Man. Well, it's like Plastic Man, the original.
I bet in the original script it was.
It might, probably not. Yeah. But like
coming
out
of his pant leg.
Plastic Man started out as a gangster.
Was not a great book, but that last scene made me laugh. It was pretty funny, and I thought that was a cool idea. So that one I'll give honorable mention to, and then the other one I want to mention is The Hellbound Train from IDW with our own.
You talked about that like 2 years ago. No, I'm joking.
What? No, that's the other book. That's Vasily Lolos or whatever.
You just love trains.
Yeah, I kind of do like trains. It's Dave Wachter. It's a book from IDW. Horror book. Mm-hmm. It's written by Robert Block. The original story is Robert Block and adapted by some other guys who I don't know because I don't have it in front of me. But Dave did the art on it. It was good. It was really good.
His first, like...
Yeah, like his first public, well, not first public, but you would say
first mainstream.
The first somebody paid him. Yeah,
no. the first book that he hasn't had to pay for the printing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's that like?
No, I wanted to mention that, and congratulations to Dave. And I thought it looked awesome. So good work, Dave.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's Here Comes the Two, so you guys take a look at that.
The Two.
And I will mention, I've talked about it on the show before. You usually give me a hard time about it. Why? I won't even mention it on 11 o'clock.
What are you talking about?
28 Days Later,
wrapped
up.
Why do I roll my eyes? I'm the one who told you about that book, dude.
Are you?
Yeah, okay. Declan, when I'm the one who told you that book was awesome.
I thought the last time I mentioned it, you were like, oh, you're so predictable.
No, I fucking told you about that book.
Well, I have really liked this book over the last 2 years. 28 Days Later, from Boom Studios. It's written by Michael Allen Nelson. And as we talked about, Declan Shalvey was the...
So good.
He's awesome. He's great. So he was the original artist on this, and now it's been passed off to Alejandro Aragon.
Wasn't Sean Phillips tied to that at some point?
He does the covers. Okay. He does all the covers. And so this if you've seen 28 Days Later, the original movie, this picks up at the conclusion of that. It doesn't involve the 28 weeks later.
Yeah.
This is 28 Days Later. It is after the end of the first movie. And this is the continuing story really revolving around Selena and an American journalist that is coming to with his team to report on what happened in England with the infected. And the last issue just came out. It kind of concludes the story for me, but leaves it open-ended, as all good horror movies do, to maybe continue it at some point. But 24 issues of really, really good modern horror, fantastic character moments, and I was thinking back over the history of those 24 issues, a lot of shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it really kind of, in the times that I wait for Walking Dead or really need a zombie fix,
right.
28 Days was there. But over the course of the series, I probably in the last year have enjoyed this a lot more than even Walking Dead. It's something that I really
high
look
praise.
I look forward to this book every month, and I'm a little sad that it's going away. Even though apparently Michael Allen Nelson is. It's getting some mainstream work. I don't know if it's Marvel or DC, but he's moving on to something.
Are you trying to say that IDW isn't mainstream?
He's moving on to a Marvel or DC. Hey, this is from Boom, not IDW.
Oh, but, Boom, sorry.
And Boom has done some really nice stuff, especially...
They're not mainstream at all.
They've done some nice
just
stuff.
I'm kidding.
Come on, Chip Mosher's going to be like, what the fuck, guys? No, they've done some nice slices.
Hey, I don't think anyone talked more about Boom...
We've been big Boom fans from the beginning.
Go back when they first launched, we talked them up plenty.
Yeah. It's like, we were all over like Potter's Field, everything. I'm gonna miss this book. But if you're looking for if you're a fan of 28 Days Later, the original movie, you should, and a comic book fan, there's no reason for you to read this, because some licensed property books, honestly, can be shit. This one has been really good from the get go.
High praise. Wow. I read the first five or six years, whatever Declan had done.
Mm-hmm.
And not because I didn't know Declan until after I started reading it and got to know him afterwards, but I was just so turned on by his art. It was phenomenal. And
so was Marvel.
Obviously. And then he left, and I kind of stopped reading it, but I might have to go back.
The story continued to be really good. I mean, it breaks down in arcs, but, there is a line from the first issue to the last one, and you're like, it all makes sense. And like I was saying, it's like you look back, and it's like, man, a lot of shit happened over those 24 issues. There's very, very few filler issues in this, and I think as a collection, it is going to work really, really well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Good stuff. And the ending, no spoilers, very good horror book, horror film ending. You feel like there's an ending to it, but there is the opening, like there always is in a really good horror movie, that, it's like, might not be over.
Right.
Good stuff. Excellent. Good stuff. Yeah. All right. So you guys look at the tooth?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's like crazy looking, isn't it?
Just the cover alone, it's got like stickers, and it looks like somebody wrote on it with pen their names, yeah. Cullen Bunn and Matt Kent. And
there's like the old like Marvel superhero character sheet for the tooth in there with like, you know, his strength and stamina, agility. So, you know, I don't know if this is a character that Matt or Cullen had worked up in their ute. But
yeah, this looks fantastic.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to pick that up.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're a Matt Kent fan, it's gorgeous.
Gots to pick it up with my other. What did I pick up today?
Legion Lost.
Legion Lost.
I've never read that. I've heard it's good.
Neither. American Vampire Volume 2, even though I haven't read Volume 1 yet.
Really?
I have it. I just haven't
the
read
first
it.
The first volume, I liked a little bit better than the second volume. I think the second volume is kind of it's really good, but I think it's a bridge.
It's Raphael Albuquerque.
It's a bridge to where they're going, so I think it's a good middle chapter.
The Flash Omnibus, because if you put the word omnibus on anything, pretty much I'll
buy it.
You have
to buy it, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
it's law.
It's a lot of Jeff Johns, you're getting ready to know more about Heatwave.
Yeah.
Can you handle the excitement?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I can or not. I don't know.
Can you take that
much? Why am I getting that?
Can you take that much Pied Piper in your comic side?
You know what I'm thinking is I'm collecting this stuff for my kids when I die, just so they just curse my name because they have to move.
Jack
is thousands of pounds of hardcovers that are in my basement. They're just going to hate me for it. So there you go, kids. That's what I'm leaving you. That's my legacy.
Merry fucking Christmas.
Yeah, enjoy that. But I'm going to grab the tooth because that looks awesome.
It's
two of my favorite guys in comics. Yeah. So.
And to St. Louisans. So a shout out to the
Well, I won't hold that against them, but otherwise.
So, yep, a shout out to the Lou. All right. We got anything else here?
Read BPRD. It's the best ongoing comic.
You know,
in
there was the other comic I was maybe going to talk about tonight is the Plague Ships, which is based on Mike Mignola's prose novel Baltimore. Oh. It's that character.
And is so it like the Corner Boys and McNulty and those guys from The Wire?
different
Baltimore?
I wish. We got to get Mignola to write a Wire comic adaptation.
I'm rewatching. I just finished season one, rewatching The Wire.
Yeah.
Because I finally got
the rewatch is so much fun.
It may be better because I've pretty much forgotten it all. I mean, I've gotten to the point now where I'm so far removed from it that. And my memory so
bad. Isn't that the best thing about getting old?
I have no idea what's coming next. I mean, I kind of remember some stuff, but I'm at the point where I don't know what's coming next. I'm not sure what's going to happen. And that first season is just so
good.
It's so good, but so fucking depressing at the same time. Yeah. Like, just like what a slap in the face of, you know, just cold reality.
Season four is some of the best TV that has ever been made.
Ever will be made.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Speaking of more TV, thank you for turning me on to United States of Terra.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, it's canceled now.
Got one more
three seasons, but great show.
Have you watched the last episode?
I haven't. I know. I'm one episode behind.
There's a great Patton Oswalt moment where he's...
Are you going to spoil something for me? Why would you do this?
He looks like he's getting ready to.
I know. There's a great moment with Patton Oswalt, and then you're going to tell me what happens.
It's a comic book moment.
Okay, I don't need any more. I don't need any more. Don't spoil it. Let me enjoy it as it was, as God and Showtime intended.
There's
to
a
enjoy
great, there's
it, God
a great
damn it.
Patton
Aren't
Oswalt
they the same
comic
thing?
Moment.
Not pretty
that's
much.
It. So yeah, and we mentioned there's our TV fix. We mentioned Game of Thrones, which is awesome, and United States of Terra.
God
Wire.
Damn it, Jimmy! That's my bunk impression. God damn it, Jimmy!
still the scene where they're going.
You have it now, motherfucker.
They're going through the crime scene in that house, and it's the fuck scene.
Oh
fuck,
yeah, you know what?
Fuck,
I take that.
Fuck.
I have an upcoming page of Blast Furnace where well, it's not fuck, but the word bears is said by the character in every single panel. I love that kind of stuff. Just what can you do with the exclamations and the facial expression and how you can change how that one word is said over and over and over again. Also,
the mayor.
Also, so here's some God Hates Astronauts behind the scenes stuff. So I put Reginald L. Johnson in everything I do, who played Carl Winslow in Family Matters, famously, oh, right. Or was Sergeant Al Powell in Die Hard. I love him from Die Hard, but Carl Winslow is a funnier name. More people know him as Carl Winslow. So I put him in everything I do. Like, he's in some Devil's Due books that I drew back in the day, just sitting in the background and stuff. Like, I love that guy, and I love putting him in everything. And so he's in God Hates Astronauts issue 2, where he's gnarled Winslow, because Carl Winslow had his arms ripped off, and they got replaced by gorilla arms. So he's gnarled Winslow, and when I started writing him, because I write all of my characters by casting an actor or an actor in a role or a person I know as the voice.
God, if I would have known, if I only would have known how much of a Die Hard fan you were.
Oh my gosh, you have no idea.
We talked about the project I'm working on now with Tony, and I didn't know.
Yeah, and so when I started writing in Gnarled Winslow, he had to have more of an edge than Carl Winslow, and so I 100%
the gorilla arms weren't right. enough.
Well, I because he was more disgruntled because he had to live with these gorilla arms. So I 100% wrote him as Wendell Pierce as Bunk in The Wire, and so
God then
when, like 100%, he's swearing all over the place, and so then when I was doing like the suggested
now he's
voice
Antoine
talent,
Baptiste.
Right,
oh,
yeah.
In Treme.
Yeah. And so when I was doing suggested voice talent on issue 2, he's actually, Reginald L. Johnson is played by Wendell Pierce, playing Gnarled Winslow. But then I have Reginald L. Johnson does the voice of some astronaut later in issue 2, because I had to have him in there somehow. But anyway,
so
he does
both
not.
Of them.
Yeah,
nice.
Wendell Pierce is playing Carl Winslow as Gnarled Winslow.
That's
in the
awesome.
Book.
That is awesome.
Nice.
God damn it.
Great show. Great
stuff.
Yeah. Great TV.
Good stuff.
I love it.
All right. So, Brian Brown, once again, GodHatesAstronauts.com.
Yo.
You can follow you on Twitter at AstronautHater.
That's the game, yo.
BlastFurnaceComic.com.
Yes. As of June 27th,
mm-hmm.
It will be 5 days a week until June 27th. Of
is this sort of a midlife crisis thing? You're turning 30 and you're like, I got to do
kind
something.
Of. It's a frustration with how long it takes me to do comics, you know, especially because I have to be doing other things. And so it's just like, I have a lot of ideas and stories that I'd like to tell. And so I'm just going to tell them, you know, and
do
tell
it.
Them as fast as I can. And this is like the best way. Because then people don't have to complain about it not updating and it, you know. And I don't have to worry about, like, oh, all right, so I've got this great joke, but, you know, it takes 3 or 4 pages to tell. So then, you know, that's, you know, 30, 40 hours of work down the line.
No.
It's like, oh, my gosh, you know. So yeah, so this is my get it done quick and dirty. hopefully not too much quantity over quality, but I actually am finding now that there are so many. It is such an unfocused comic immediately because I have so many pages. So there's like, you know, in issue 2 of it, there's a flashback within a flashback within a flashback within a flashback that just it just keeps going, and it's just like, and I'm just gonna have fun with it as much as I can, and I will celebrate the fact that it's unfocused.
That's awesome.
Like anyone
who
wants to review
it
and say it's unfocused, I agree with you, and I'm embracing that.
Nice. Fantastic. All right. Check out if you are in the Chicago area, all the great things coming up at Challengers Comics and Conversation.
Yes.
We're sitting in the Rogues Gallery right now, and there's a fantastic Robert Atkins art exhibit. Robert Atkins, who does G.I. Joe. He's doing the G.I. Joe Snake Eyes.
DC Universe Online.
Yeah, DC Universe Online. He did some character studies.
Ultimate Fantastic Four.
So come check out the exhibit as it runs here
Rogues.
through June, and check the Challengers website for all of the great stuff they have, different book club stuff, upcoming signings. We've got some really cool stuff coming up.
Stuart Immonen, Eduardo Rizzo.
Have they announced the Eduardo Rizzo? It is announced. Okay,
hope
good.
So.
Good. Yes, it has been announced. So yes, Eduardo Rizzo.
It was on their website, so I'm assuming.
So he'll be here in August. So yeah, awesome stuff here in Chicago, and wanna
us. We're here all the time.
Mention all of the 11 o'clockers that that came in on their way to Summit City.
Those silly bastards.
Yeah, the silly bastards that came in and listened to 11 o'clock this week for details on the 11 o'clock anthology.
Hey, they put a lot. No, yeah.
That was very well done.
I feel.
What?
I feel responsible for that small little snippet of plug for the 11 o'clock anthology. I was only kidding when I said you couldn't talk about it.
Talk about that on your other fucking show. So yes.
Well, that was only in response
To Vince.
To Vince Davis.
It's like about that show on the other show. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, I feel like I'm married to one of the shows. I don't know which one. You're and the other one is my fucking girlfriend. No, and I neither. Like I'm buying roses for one chocolates for the other. I don't know yet. Who am I coming
they
home
can
with? Who am I sleeping with?
They
tonight?
Can have you. They can yeah? have all of you.
All right, Ryan Brown, thank you so much for sitting in with us tonight. Please come back again. We had a really good time.
That would be great.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed myself very much.
Outstanding.
It's been awesome. Thank you.
Everyone have a fantastic rest of your June.
God damn it.
We'll talk to you again sometime after our nation's birthday.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the meantime?
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way